Right, you said you got married?
I got married in 1937, and I'd only been married for a month and I got sacked.
Oh.
And I think I went down to the labour exchange, there wasn't much money attached to it, and I went round several firms and went to Taylor & Hobson, which is Rank Taylor & Hobson nowadays, their factory in Stoughton Street.
Yeah.
And I got set on there, but it was quite a menial job. I didn't get much money. We had quite a struggle for the first few years of my married life.
What were you doing there?
Well, I started off doing what was called fettling, which is a rather rough job on castings. You know. Then the manager put me into the tool stores. He said, you've had no experience, because it was clerical work I'd done prior to this, but Taylor Hobson's, it was quite fresh to me. The skilled workman on the shop was considered far above the clerical worker. Now, lots of other places, the clerical worker, the white collar worker, he was the top dog. He looked down on the, not Taylor Hobson's, it was a skilled trade, and you were the kingpin sort of thing. Mm. And he said, I'll put you in the tool stores to learn all the names of all the tools that were used. And then the war came along, and he moved me into the hardening shop. And I was taught the trade of hardening different metals, which I did the rest of my working life, really.
So it was a good move to go to?
Yes, it was a good move, but the pay wasn't very good. Well, engineers wasn't. I don't know why. It's much better now. You relied on overtime.
Yeah.
Not an overtime to make your money off.
So how many hours a week do you reckon you were working?
Well, the normal hours were 4 to 7. And we do at least another 5 hours on top of that, 52 hours. And if you can get a Saturday afternoon in as well, because Saturday morning was a normal part of the week then, if you get a Saturday afternoon as well, that really helps you along.
Mm.
Working conditions weren't really very good.
No.
But now I talk to people my age nowadays, they all went through the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you feel that they were reasonable employers then?
Oh yes, they were reasonable employers, yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes, Taylor Hobson, of course the rank paper brought them out now.
Yeah.
Oh yes, quite good in the Taylor & Hobson paper. One of them was found dead in the snow, you know, outside the factory.
No.
One of the
original. Tell me.
I think this was before I went there, before I started there. I found his body in Stoughton Street in the snow. And his brother was still there. The two tailors, you see, formed the company. And the managing director at such time I started was the nephew of one of the tailors, Mark Taylor. He was the boss, but he was a very nice affair.
Mm. And you worked there right through the war?
Well, all through the war, yeah.
You weren't called up?
No, it was reserve occupation.
Yeah. Do you remember, can you talk about the war?
Yeah, whatever. I remember when the bombs fell in Leicester.
Do you?
I lived in Hartington Road at the time.
Oh, well, we're jumping ahead a bit then, aren't we? We need to cover perhaps when you got married and when you moved to Hartington Road first, and then married.
So married in 1937, and the war broke out in 1939. That's right, I started at Taylor Hobson's just before the war. I was there when the war broke out because I'd gone to work on a Sunday morning. Because obviously everybody knew that war was imminent and they wanted all the records, photostatic machines, sort of thing. And I'd gone in to help with that. And I remember a man named Adams. I don't know whether you know Adams, the shop in Ice. Ice Street, is it called Ice Street or Cross Street? Adams the ironmonger, I think he called them. But it was, that was the family, the Adams. In that shot, there used to be a photograph, and it was, I'm not sure whether it was the Adams that was one of the bosses at Tyne Hobson, or whether it was his father, but he, I remember him, there were some old cottages lived, built, opposite to Tyne Hobson's. Is it Porter Street, somewhere there? It's all been knocked about since then. And he'd gone in there to listen to the radio at 11 o'clock, I think it was Sunday morning, because we'd all wandered out, hanging about outside, and he came out and he said, "We are at war," you know. That was it. Well, I went over dinner time, so I lived in Hartington Road then, got to the bottom of the Hartington Hill to go up, and there's a fellow walking down here and said, "There, we're at war, they're at it." It little did he or I know what it all meant. But, actually, nothing seemed to happen then, because things were stalemate. Nobody moved. It wasn't until the following spring when things began to happen. And so I got married, and I was living in Hartington Road. Well, it was an attic house.
What do you mean by an attic house?
There was the ordinary upstairs, and then there was another flight up with just one room right at the top, you see. Mm-hmm. Which, well, it wasn't at that time. We used to sleep, you know, when we had the family and decided we had four children, we rigged it up as a bedroom. But on the night we had the... I'd gone to work. We used to finish at 10 to 8. They worked... Funny hours at Tyne Hobson. We worked on a metric system. And the day wasn't divided into 5 minutes. It was... seven, eight. It used to start at 7:08, which was 12 minutes to 8 in the morning. So point one was 6 minutes. Anyway, we left at 12 minutes to 8 at night. And came out of the factory to go home, and the sky was lit up with flares, and it was a dash off home. Well, no, this was the night of the... Was it the night of the raid? Yes, I think it was the night of the raid. We'd bought a humming top, because it got a youngster then, the first boy, and we were playing with this humming top, and it went... And we said, "That sounds like the siren, doesn't it?" And it was a siren. We went dashing up to the attic to look through the window, and we saw the one come down over Primaloni Willis. Saw this big, big smoke. I never got downstairs as quick as home all night. Two flies to say, so,
did you have a shelter?
Yeah, there was a shelter. Yeah, a brick shelter in the back, you know.
In the garden? Your garden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to go into it, but it wasn't very comfortable. Sometimes we'd stop indoors and just put a blanket or something over the window in case the glass broke, you know, and came in. And there was a torpedo type thing. We heard it chugging over the house, and there were several houses just below around Chelmer Street, were flattened by. We heard it go chugging over, and in the morning when we came to look out, you look down Vulcan Road and see curtains blowing out windows. Living on the hill, it must have saved us, because the thing came down like that.
Yeah, what number on Hartington Road were you?
I was 32. You know where the road splits, our Vulcan Road? We're about four doors below that joint, and on the Melbourne Road end, Nenham Street end.
Yeah.
Yeah. The back gate actually came into Vulcan Road. It was the last out of the four houses. The front door was in Hartington Road and the back was in Vulcan Road. So quite a long back road, and being the last of the four or two, as the roads diverge, you see.
Yeah. Do you remember, were you in the ARP?
I joined the Home Guard.
Yeah. Was there a local Home Guard then?
Oh yes, all the manufacturing companies had a platoon. I think I was 22nd Platoon. And
this was attached to your place of work?
I was attached to the place of work, yes. Oh. But then either one or two or three platoons formed a company. We were with Jones and Shipman's, who were then Or was it Pollard? No, Pollard's. Pollard's onto Savies Road. Then with the other company were there, we formed. I think it was C Company. And then, of course, above that, there was the battalion. Not on the same lines as in the army, you know, of platoons. And we used to go on route marches. I joined the signalling corps. I did not know the Morse code and so there was signalling. Used to meet on Jambore Roof. You know, Jambore Factory, I'm in Nevada Road.
Yeah.
It's a flat roof.
Yeah.
We used to meet up there with the semaphore doing the flagging at signals.
Yeah. Did you, how often were you on duty?
Well, every Sunday morning there was a parade, and one night a week as a rule.
What did you do on the night a week?
Well, I joined the signal corps, and my one night a week was out at John Ball. Mm. We used to learn Morse code and signalling with the flag semaphore, you know.
Did you ever need to put it into practice?
Not really. We'd... We're on a parade one Sunday morning, and of course there was a proper procedure with the signalling, you know, you'd say, oh, I forget now what it was now, but you had to stick to this procedure, and then there was a, I think it was a horse, had broken somewhere loose, or you know, milk float, you know, with a horse trim, it was going a bit berserk, and the message was to be got to Toon or somebody that was nearest to it to go and help, but we forgot all about procedure and all gabbling away one against the other. Then we used to go down to the Abbey Park, and they sent me right against the far gates on the main road with a wireless. We've got wireless sets then, we've progressed to say the war was going on, we've got more equipment. But of course, either the battery on the set that I got or the battery on the sending set wasn't working, so I never got any messages. But somebody eventually moved back in his back, you know, so I had to walk back. We went up to another thing we did. We went on the race course at Stoningham, you know, bomb throwing and grenades. Yeah. Mm. Oh, my God. Quite interesting, really.
Yeah.
But we were never involved in any actual wartime activities.
Yeah.
I can often laugh to myself when I see Dad's army, you know. I can see it. I can see it. The type of people as well.
Do you remember the bomb that fell on Highfield Street?
Yeah. There was a fella. When I first started work at Manor Bromley's, a young lad named Phil Yates worked there, and he used to have fits. He used to have hinges on the front of the legs of his seat so he couldn't go back, you see. Once or twice he did have a fit and a bit of a do about it. But he, after I'd left Manor Bromley's and was working at Taylor Hobson's, there was a girl in the drawing office was a cousin to this Phil Yates, so he used to get bits of messages about him through her. And he joined the ARP and was in High Street, the church, what was it now, at Highfield Street?
The Methodist Church.
Yes. Oh dear. Oh, my mind's going. Anyway, he was in the ARP there when this bomb dropped. Apparently it did him good.
Mm.
Yeah, it killed his having fits.
Seems a bit drastic.
Isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know whether he's still alive, he'd be a bit older than me. It was a daredevil. Just to ride on the back of people, parks and everything. Never ought to have done all the way out fits. Because in those days you had a push bike. You had a little bit sticking out of the back and you stand on it and hold on this shoulders of the chap and drop.
Right. Yeah.
Biggest daredevil under the sun. I suppose that's one way of combating it, fighting against it mentally, really, to get a bravado.
Yeah. And after the war, You still were employed at
I still carried on there. Now then, I was 40, I think, when I left there. So that'd be 1956, wouldn't it? Yes. I felt I wasn't getting on as well as I ought to. And I went to... Where did I start? I made a mistake in leaving, actually. I know that now. Bella Romney's, Taylor Hobson's, there's another small engineering firm. Well, no, Xello Corporation, which is still in existence, I think, in Hastings Road, somewhere down there. That's all been altered since those days, it's all been built up. I went there. I didn't get on very well there at all. The face didn't fit. And I left there and I went to Metalastic in Warren Street, which is part of the John Bull, which is now part of the Dunlop Group. And the manager there worked with me at Taylor Hobson's during the war. No one had obviously, and we got on very well together. And I went there as a foreman on one of the, well, the hardening department. Mm. And of course, I got fed up with it. I wanted to move again. And I made another bad move there. Now then, this was the first time I was made redundant when I left there and went. Cotton's at Loughborough. I went there, went to his hosiery machine again. Well, that was a shock. Every day they went on strike. Never knew what about. Threw down tools and they all walked out. Then again, I didn't get on as well as they'd promised me. So I left there and went to watch was Stibbies. I worked on the night shift. Stibbies were again with hosiery machine manufacturers. And they went up the spout. So, in the meantime, my eldest son was living in Canada. So we blew my redundancy money and went to see him in Canada. And when I came back, I got a job at Boone's, I think it was. And that went up the spout as well. Then the people that I knew at somewhere between Cotton. No, Stibbies. I mentioned Stibbies, didn't I? Yes. I went on the night shift there and then got up the spout. But they'd been bought out by somebody else and they got a heat treatment shop at Cosby. So I went over there, and the man that was in charge, they'd gone out on an outing somewhere, and he collapsed and died. So I got promoted to being in charge, and I finished up being in charge there. Not quite good to me, fella. There again, the man in charge belonged to Canberra Engineering eventually, that got sold out. The man in charge, I also knew at Taylor Hobson's. And strangely enough, his cousin to the lady that lives next door here.
Can I go back to something you said earlier?
Yeah.
You joined the Labour Party League of Youth.
Yeah.
Were you very involved in local politics?
Well, I was at an age where the young people could thought they could mould the world and make it away. We knew people. A friend of mine, they joined the Spanish Civil War and went there. It was at that period, you see.
Mm.
I've got, if you look at those photographs, there's one somewhere of a group.
Don't hiking. Go on.
Well, I don't know where we went. I couldn't tell you that. I'm more interested in the girl. usually out Charlton Forest area we used to go. Mm. I'm not really a good walker, but those didn't buy. We used to go hiking. Mm. I can't remember what we got up to. We're all pretty good. We were in those days, not like nowadays. You had to behave yourself.
Did you feel that it was reasonably safe to go anywhere?
Oh, yes. I mean, when I started courting, my wife lived in Newfound Pool, off the Pool Road. I lived on Mere Road. And perhaps 2 in the morning on Saturday night when I left her. Mm-hmm. I used to do nothing, get on my bike and bike home. I never had any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Any trouble I had, my bike lamp didn't work. I was going along and the voice said, "Where'd you lie?" Policeman, Goodness Street, call me out.
Were the streets well lit then, or was it dark?
Well, reasonable. It wasn't dark, reasonable. Mm-hmm. The first time I took my wife home, after a Christmas party, it was through the Labour Party League of Youth. A lot of us got together and we had a bit of a Christmas party, and she was there. We finished up canoodling. And I took her home. I was walking on, you know, on the air. And I got down to the bottom of Pool Road and there was a Foss Road going along. And I hadn't a clue whether I got to turn left or right. And it started to rain and I got a new overcoat on. But I turned right and then finished off down the Kingrity Road and that way, wandered home, did the wrong thing.
Mm.
One night, one of them was calling me. Got home, my mother was sitting waiting for me. About 1 in the morning, this was. Oh dear.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, did you use Spinney Hill Park much? You lived very near it.
As a child, yes. It was a thing to take sandwiches and have your tea on at Spinney Hill Park. And then in later life, used to go watch the cricket. There's been a lot of cricket matches on the men's cricket pitch down, all the factories. Played almost every night. There used to be crowds leaning watching me because they've got 7 or 8 matches on the cricket pitch. And there was one fella, I can't remember his name now. We all liked to see him. He could hit the ball right over East Park Road. I think he played for the Imperial Tide Prize. I think that was the firm he played for. But it was a regular thing where you get crowds of men, well, girls and women as well, I suppose. I wasn't really conscious of the opposite sex at that time.
Yeah.
And of course, when I started courting, we went and played tennis on this video park. I remember them building a sandpit on the top along the Mere Road, what we used to call the woods, and the paddling pool on the bottom. The 2 paddling pools and a long bit in between if you walk. I remember them being built. And of course in the winter time, when I'm jumping up a year or two now, they used to do sledging down the hill there. Warren Marvellous.
Yeah.
Because there were 1 or 2 odd trees, you see, and you had to dodge the trees.
Yeah.
All the Italian prisoners of war used to come up there. Sledging from Shady Lane, you know, was it the Germans? I think it was some of the Italians for a start and Germans later for the big camp on the Shady Lane there. And of course, getting towards the end of the war, they used to let them come out and used to get sledging, didn't they?
Yeah.
It must have been a little part of it.
Can you tell me, when you wanted to buy your clothes when you were young, where did you go?
Knowing my mother, I should imagine the co-op.
I mean, when you were sort of in your teens and wanted to make your own statement.
Well, I've never been very interested in buying clothes, to tell you the truth. In fact, no, I don't know when I was in my teens, where I went. I wasn't very close, Constance. And now after I was married, the only time my wife would get me to my clothes was when we were on holiday and we were walking around, you know, killing time sort of thing. Mm. Even now I don't know buying clothes.
Either.
I've got a daughter who lives in Holland and I go over there at Christmas the same. And she said, come on, buy some clothes for me.
Did you go away on holiday, Matt? You were just talking about holidays.
Well, when the children were younger, but going back to the beginning, before I was married, so I got an aunt at Southampton and an aunt at Oswestry, and they were the two places we used to go on holiday. I do remember going with my mother to Yarmouth, or was it Lowestoft? No, Lowestoft, for a fortnight. That was a big thing in those days. But when I got the family, we used to go to Inkermell and Mablethorpe and this sort of thing. And then we went to the Isle of Man. Nothing. The most holidays we had were the last 10 years of my wife's life. We used to go abroad a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She loved travelling, and I'm only too grateful that I was able to do this mm-hmm. in the late years.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, it was with the children. It was just ordinary seaside holidays and nothing special. Scarborough, Yarmouth, Torquay, Paignton. I think went to London now. Yeah, London now.
You had your children when you were living on Hartingdon Road.
Yes.
All of them?
All of them, all born there, yeah.
Yeah. Did they went to school locally?
Yes. It started off at Charmer Street, except the last one. But the others all started off at Charmer Street, then the boy went to the City Boys, the daughter went to the Collegiate, the other son went to Oliver Newton's, and the last girl didn't make the grade. But she never started at Charmer Street. There was a little school attached to St Saviour's Church on St Saviour's Road. And I rather think this is her. But they're the one that looking at her as a prim and proper. And I can't sort out where that was taken.
Right, now, can we talk about the school that your youngest daughter went to, St Saviour's
yes,
School?
Yeah. Well, my wife really decided she didn't want her to go to Charmer Street because she lives a little dot and it seemed such a big, overwhelming place. And she went to St Saviour. I don't know how she got her in, whether she had to see, but she went there and then, because she moved from there to Crown Hill, well, that would be when she was 11, I would imagine.
Was St Saviour's School a private school?
No, not that we didn't have to pay anything, no.
Was it attached to the church then, as a church school, do you know?
I don't think so. I never heard her talking about the vicar or anybody like that going to the school. Why do children don't tell you things?
It was a small school, said?
Oh, yeah, a very small school, yeah.
How small?
Oh, I think only about two classes, you know.
Oh, that's small.
So I'm just wondering when she moved to Crown Hill before she was 11. There were only two classes, and what a stretch from age six to 11, wouldn't they? Yeah. I'd imagine so. That's a more. It was only a very small school, though.
Yeah. She did well there?
Yeah. She came out, said, I've been singing a song. I said, what is it? She said, right in the middle of Father's bed. And we've always had a joke about this song, right in the middle of Father's bed.
Presumably you didn't have to go to St Saviour's Church then, to go to the school?
Oh, no, because we went to church, you know, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, my wife was Church of England, but she wasn't practising church going.
You remembered the name of your daughter's teachers?
Well, I know it was Mr. Taylor. I remember that one, Mr. Taylor, the one on the left there, I'm sure.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's interesting. And your other daughter, you said, went to collegiate.
She went to the collegiate.
Can you tell me as much as you can remember about collegiate? She had to pass a scholarship to go there, did she?
Yes, yes. Well, I don't really know a lot about it, though, they were around.
Did she have to wear a uniform?
Oh, yes, yes.
What was the uniform like?
You don't expect me to remember things like...
What colour was it, then?
Well, then it was a dark bluish sort of colour. And wore soft felt hats in the winter and straw hats in the summer, I think that's...